This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 117, and I'm your host, Simon Bowen. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. If you want to hear the extended version of this interview, please join the Patreon campaign. And you can get a 7-day free trial where you can get access to the more than 100 episodes in the back catalogue. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week I'm talking to James Book and Robert Long about their book, Alien Abduction, The Control Factor. Jim is the former state director of MUFON in New York State and is the co-author of the book UFOs Above the Law, which is a collection of UFO sightings. Hi, Bob and Jim. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast. So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Alien Abduction, The Control Factor. Could you give us an overview, a broad idea, by what you mean by the control factor?
Well, that sounds like your question, Jim. It was your idea.
The control factor is something that had bothered me for a long time. I've been doing this work for, well, right now, actually, over 60 years. But I got more involved in it in the 90s when I joined the Mutual UFO Network and I became an investigator. And I started interviewing I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people on their sightings and then people that have been abducted. One thing that always kept bothering me is, if you're going to be kidnapped by a human being, you got a chance to fight back somehow. But if you're getting kidnapped or abducted by an alien, it seems like you have no say, no control. And I always wondered why. So this thing of control had bothered me. So I started doing research on it and trying to figure out, you know, what can they do? I mean, I've heard about implants and I've heard about hypnosis and stuff like that. And I'm, you know, you wonder, is this why and how this is happening? That because they have a means of hypnotizing us, or somehow they implanted something in our body that they can turn us on and off when they want. So I started doing the research and I started writing up all this information. It started out really basically just to solve my curiosity. And then I came up with the idea of making it into a book form. And once I got started, there were a lot of questions that I couldn't find answers to because I just didn't have the technology to go in that direction. And that's when I called Bob and I asked Bob to help me with things, because back in the past when I first met Bob and we did an awful lot of talking, spent hours on the phone and in person. And Bob was my teacher for abductions. I learned everything I learned from Bob. And because he's been doing it an awful lot longer than I had been, I was doing great with just the UFO sightings until he helped me get into the abduction part. And I would call him up and say, Bob, you know, and I'd ask him a question, this or that. And then we got into another part where I called him up and I said, Bob, how do you stop a car without turning it off? And how could they do it? And so he went into that. And so we got to the point where I had to stop calling Bob and ask him a question of this and that. And I just said, Bob, why don't you write the book with me? And basically, that's how we got it. But control is something that everybody seems to want to have. And even if you don't realize you want control, you do. If you're having a conversation and you want to get a point across, you're going to try and you're going to get it in there somehow. As we explain in the book, control starts at birth. In fact, it might even start before birth when you start feeling the kicks and the bumps in the stomach. And I'm not talking about me or any other guy, but just the woman. But the infant is doing it when he's born. He tries to control when he wants to eat. The parents try to control the children growing up. And this just kept right on going up through adulthood. Who's got control? Student or teacher? Student or parent? Or a child or parent? And then it goes into the employee and the employer. And then you go into government and citizen. And you go into government and government. And somebody wants to have control. Just look around in the world now and see who's trying to fight who for control.
Reading through your book, there's so many different levels of control or so many different things that are controlled. One of them is having a memory of being abducted, but then there's lots of people, the memory has to be recovered some way, maybe out of hypnosis or just it comes back over the years. So that memory's been removed. So do you feel that that is a form of control?
Certainly is. Memory is a funny thing. I mean, when you really think about it, what is memory? You know, you create a memory. It's biochemical. It's actually nuclear in nature. I mean, you know, your memory is a group of chemicals in your brain that are formed and stored. And of course, as time goes on, some of those memories become faded, they degrade. And that's why, you may have forgotten long about something that happened in your past and somebody will show you a picture and it all of a sudden it comes right back and clear again because it reconstituted that memory that was floating around in there that started to degrade. And from that point on, from that picture, everything is renewed again. And you'll start the slow process of degradation of that memory. When someone has an abduction experience, okay, there can be a number of reasons why they don't remember. First and foremost, a lot of times if somebody has a traumatic experience, the last thing they really want to do is remember it. And the mind is pretty good at self-protection. And if at all possible, if it's a memory that really is something that the mind thinks that it can't handle, it's pretty good at packing it away in the back and just forgetting about it, which, sounds kind of far-fetched initially, but it actually happens quite a bit. And no one wants to relive a traumatic experience generally. And because of that fact, it's self-protection. Now, another factor that comes into this, too, is the creatures that are abducting people quite often suggest in a form of hypnosis, if you will, that the person being abducted should not remember. Now, you can think of this as maybe a benevolent thing. Perhaps saying, okay, you're having a traumatic experience and you shouldn't remember this. But on the other side, if this person is abducted, once a month for 10 years, and each time they're told, you should not remember this. So each time it happens and they start to realize that something is happening, they relive the same initial trauma over and over and over and over again because they don't have the ability to go, oh, wait, this has happened again, and I survived it. It's new and fresh and weird all over again. So, they're probably just trying to make sure that, as few people really know what's going on as possible, because that way it makes it a lot tougher for investigators like Jim and myself to connect some of the dots. But, you talk to enough people over decades, and a picture comes in anyway. But as far as the memory, sometimes it's got to be, wiped, if you will, by the creatures that are abducting the people. And another part of the time, it's probably, I don't want to remember that, so therefore I won't, if that answers your question.
Yeah, it's kind of, I suppose, like PTSD. Your brain might automatically remove something that's traumatic to protect you.
Yes, yes. Or a combination of the both.
And there's people, like you were talking about the picture. I've talked to people on this podcast who say, back, I think it was the 80s, the late 80s, when Whitley Strieber's book came out, The Communion, and they walked into a bookshop and they saw that face, and it was a sudden shock.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that.
As much as the mind tries to shut things off, it's always getting this little flashback or something that's trying to escape some kind of a thought or a vision or something, a flashback or something is trying to come out. And the mind seems to be fighting somehow. And that's usually when somebody will go to somebody to be regressed or something. Because you do the work, you're doing regressions yourself. And they're seeking help to find out what it is that is in their mind that they can't visualize or realize.
There's this phenomenon of missing time as well, isn't there, where people might see a UFO and then an instant later they're somewhere else, or it's a couple of hours have gone and they don't know where that 2 hours has gone. So that's like a memory edit, isn't it? But the weird thing about it might be that the person can remember seeing a UFO. So it's almost like, are the ETs deliberately leaving that so that the person can remember the UFO, or have they messed up and they meant to block the whole thing, but they didn't quite get it all?
I think there's a certain limitation to what they can control as far as our memory. You have a situation where someone sees a UFO and they become aware of it. And quite often people will say, I think that they're aware of me. Somehow there's a connection established there. And I can even vouch for that myself in a UFO sighting that I had years and years ago. I mean, it was totally unrelated to what we're talking about here, but I saw a bright ovoid shaped light over top of trees about 300 yards away. And, it looked like a helicopter with a spotlight on it, but there was no sound. It wasn't moving or anything. And I'm looking at that and I go, wow. I'm thinking to myself, what are you? Do something so I can identify what I'm looking at. And suddenly the thing started bobbing back and forth in an arc. And, it was like I asked it to do something, and then suddenly it did something. And of course, I freaked out and ran to get a camera. And of course, by the time I came back to get a video camera, it was gone. But, people quite often will have a sighting and they feel that there's some kind of curiosity or a connection. They feel like they're being watched by what they're watching. Now, there's an occurrence of what we call doorway amnesia, when someone is being abducted. They will sometimes remember beings appearing. They will remember being not be able to move. They will quite often remember being elevated in some type of a beam up to the craft, and usually, they're either unaware of how they get in the craft, or they see some type of an opening, but they don't remember once they go through that opening. They rarely ever have any kind of a conscious memory past that point. And the same goes where after they're being removed from the craft, a lot of times they'll have some vague memory of floating in the air, coming down to the ground, and there's a light up above them somehow, and they don't really understand. And I think a certain amount of edits do happen in their memory. From that point, they remember seeing the UFO, and they remember seeing the UFO fly away. And if you close that gap and the person doesn't really look into the experience terribly deep, they say, oh, I saw a UFO. It was there for just a few seconds and it flew away. And if they don't remember a missing time event, you know, like, oh, wow, time went by much quicker than I had pictured it did. While 2 or 3 hours have passed, I don't know why, but and just go on with their life. Then it was just a UFO sighting that was noted in their memory, and that's about as far as it ever goes. Until, like Jim alluded to, that sometimes people start having flashbacks, the little bits and pieces of memory that come floating forth, and you know, sometimes it's a vision of something that they don't understand or something that's scary. I remember years and years ago, I was working with a person who was having abductions. In fact, it was over in England. And they hadn't really had much memory of other than seeing a UFO and wonderment about it and feeling some type of connection. But they were sitting at a board table. And the person across from this person had this shiny silver pen that they were twirling in their fingers. And, the person that I've been working with was watching this. And all of a sudden, they had a flashback of an alien gray with some type of an instrument in their hand that was acted like it was twirling around for some reason. And they just had this flash and they panicked right in the middle of this boardroom because of like, whoa, what was that type deal? And the person had to excuse themselves to, gain a little composure. But, sometimes stuff happens like that. It just pops in there. It's trying to get to the surface. And that's why a lot of times, if you go to seek a professional to help you and there's some regression involved to help, or a lot of times just asking the right questions and using a little bit of heartfelt common sense, you can get people to remember a lot of stuff without, making any suggestion of what they might have remembered as well. But a hypnotic regression, way back when I was a member of MUFON, I was also a member of the Intruders Foundation with Bud Hopkins, and I got a chance to see Bud actually do hypnotic regressions. And, it was an amazing thing, the stuff that would come out that the person wasn't aware of and that we weren't aware of. And just by asking simple questions that weren't particularly pointed in any direction, just being vague and seeing what comes out of their mind. But, the whole part of the memory oriented to this, it varies from person to person. Some people will have a much greater deal of memory, and others don't remember a thing. They remember they had a rough night and something may have happened, but they have no idea what, and they find a strange mark on their body, or they find leaves between their toes that weren't there when they went to bed. There's weird stuff like that.
There's another form of control, I think. I was talking to a woman who saw a UFO. I think this was in Scotland. It's out in the countryside. And this triangular craft came over really slowly and it was silent. It was about the size of a football field. It was so big. And she stopped her car and she had a camera on the back seat. And this was back in the 80s. So, it was a film camera. She didn't have a cell phone. And she reached back and picked up the camera and then had this weird feeling, just stopped and put the camera back down again.
I had a person that went through the same experience, almost identical. Bob will be a little familiar with this. He's heard it before, but with Frank, remember Frank?
Yep.
And he was driving from New York City to upstate New York on the state thruway. As he got near the Pine Bush area on the thruway, he saw an airplane coming in his view. That's what he remembers seeing. But he turned to his wife and said, "Oh, look, hon, there's a UFO." And he thought she'd look and then he'd laugh. Well, she looked up and she screamed because there was a UFO. And it was coming up and it just flying in front of him. So he quickly pulled over to the side of the road because what he saw was a UFO landing on the ground near a bridge. He got out of the car. Well, he turned around, grabbed his camera in the back seat, just like the other one. And he was all set to go and open the door and jump out, run up the embankment over the bridge to take pictures. And when he touched the doorknob, the door handle, he forgot all about it. He put the camera back, started the car up again, and drove away. And his wife looked at him and said, "What are you doing? Why didn't you take the picture?" And he says, "Oh, I don't know." He says, "By the time I get up there, it's going to be gone. So it's not worth going over all this trouble to get no pictures." He got a couple of miles away from where he had stopped. And all of a sudden, his mind went back to, "Why didn't I stop? I could have gotten the picture." He had no control over it. They just somehow managed to tell him, you know. And like this other one that Bob just said, or no, was it you? Yeah. But they lost the control to take the picture.
They lost the free will. Yeah, if you look through UFO abduction literature, there are numerous cases involving someone who had a camera that for some reason didn't take a picture. One of them I recall was he was a professional photographer, and he had a back seat full of camera equipment and pulled over to look at a UFO that had landed in a field down behind a barn, and he was going to go take a picture of it. And just like Jim was talking about the subject Frank, you know, that about the time he went to get out, it's like, oh, you know what, it's too far away, I'm not going to be able to focus on it. The guy was a professional photographer with a bunch of cameras, he could have taken a picture of it, but he was instructed in some manner to not do so, because then it would have made whatever interaction that he has had or will have with such a craft more memorable and provable.
And there's a case in your book where you talk about a man, he might be in his house, I think, and he just gets the urge to go outside with the camera, and then there's a UFO flying by, and this would happen regularly?
Oh, yeah, that happened a lot of times. I know of two people that I've interviewed that have had that very same experience. One was in upstate New York and the other was down in New York City. And it's like they're hearing a voice telling them, "Grab your camera and go outside." And that's all they can recall hearing in their head. And when they go outside, they see the UFO going across the sky and they're able to take pictures of it. It's like they're given permission.
It's one of those things that we see in UFOs and alien abduction. It seems like a contradiction and it's confusing. It's not like they're just trying to stop all photographs when this seems to be that they're trying to display themselves for photographs.
Well, there may be a reason for that. When you think of alien abduction, you think that it's all the same species per se. The universe is a big place. And, the fact that now we, with our modern ability to take pictures of the universe and seeing literally billions and billions of galaxies out there, the fact that life is all around us, even though at great distances, life truly is all around us. It has to be. It's a numerical impossibility not to be. So why should we think that we're being visited by just one type of being that has just one motive for being here? You see numerous people talk about the grays. The grays are by far the most common, but you also get the Nordics, tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. You get the people reporting reptilian creatures, others insect type, looking similar to a praying mantis. Those are the most common. If anybody's ever watched Star Trek, for example, a ship exploring the universe way off in the future, and it has numerous variety of species aboard, and they're all on. They're all involved with the same type mission, which may be the case for people, reporting different types of being, or it could be just different species doing different types of experimentation or investigation into humans. So, that the people that have been, mentally suggested not to take the picture far outweigh the number of people, at least in my experience, that were encouraged to take a picture. And if more people were encouraged to take a picture, we'd have far many more greater UFO pictures, especially nowadays. I mean, you'd think that when everybody has a cell phone with a camera in their pocket, you'd think we'd be having all kinds of pictures show up of UFOs. And usually when there's a good UFO picture that does show up, it's usually fake. So,
yeah.
Almost the better it is, the better the picture is, the more fake it is.
Yeah.
Remember that when we went to in Wyoming County?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That guy was manufacturing his own alien pictures.
Yep.
Another part of control, which is quite disturbing, is this thing where people might wake up in the middle of the night and there's this really bright light in the room, and maybe even a couple of greys, and they try and wake up their partner, and their partner just will not wake up. It's like the ETs can control them on that level.
They've been doing this long enough where they're very familiar with our physiology, and I believe that they've learned to use some of this against us. You're familiar with the concept of REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep.
Yeah.
When you're dreaming, okay, your brain paralyzes you. It secretes a substance that inhibits the neurological activity to your limbs, so you don't try and act out a dream and go running around the room into walls and stuff like that in a panic mode, trying to live out your dream. You are paralyzed. The only part of you that isn't paralyzed, of course, is your heart and lungs, but also your eyes. That's why they call it rapid eye movement. During REM sleep, the eyes will dart back and forth like they're looking at the stuff that's in their dream. Now, you take someone who is experiencing some type of an abduction event where they're suddenly aware that they're in their bed, and there's bright bluish light coming in through the window, and they may even be aware that they're not alone in the room, that there's a couple two or three small grays there, and the only thing that they can they can move is their eyes. Okay, they're very awake. Certainly, I would be awake in a situation like that. And they're very awake, and yet they're paralyzed because I believe that these beings have learned how to control the paralysis portion of our brain to make sure that we don't get up and run or we don't get up and fight. We just lay there and our eyes moving wildly, taking in this whole experience. Now, in the case of, someone who is has their spouse next to them sound asleep and they can't wake them up, you're looking at, I think, the same type situation where they are controlling the brain physiology, the functions to make sure that person does not wake up. Again, waking up, has its mechanisms in the brain to change your state. And by controlling those mechanisms, you can make sure that the person is asleep. Yeah, no different than someone that is in a chemically induced coma, per se. So that way, this person is panicking, the abductee is panicking and is paralyzed. Or in some cases, the paralysis doesn't always work as well as it could. And they may be trying to wake their spouse or their significant other, and to no avail. And I've seen situations like this where people were being abducted from a moving automobile, and the person next to them, when the whole situation started with some type of a craft hovering over top of the car, and maybe the car failing to operate and sliding off to the side of the road, and the person driving the car or whoever the abductee. The impending abductee is looking at another person in the car, and they're just like turned off is the common phrase. They're non-responsive, and the same type of situation, I believe.
And I wonder if it's got something to do with telepathy, because it seems like particularly the Greys communicate by telepathy. And I wonder if there's a part of control that's how they do it in some way. It's ESP.
They've been able to control or to communicate with the people that are down here, people that they want to abduct. I think that through this telepathy, they are somehow using a hypnosis and doing some kind of a control through that. There have been numerous times in which, as Bob was describing, where two people would be together, and only one person even knows what's going on. And the other person might be just looking at a UFO and not even knowing that the person that was with them is already gone and doesn't know until they come back and may not even know that they've ever been abducted.
All this level of control that they have is could be, just self-defense on their part, because there's a lot of humans, if they're trying to be abducted by aliens, these people would start hitting back and maybe punching the ETs and things. So you can understand in a way they might want to control the humans.
Yeah. I remember long, long time ago, I was riding in a car with a fellow who had come to me with some abduction experiences, and while we were riding in the car, a strange light appeared in the sky, and he saw it and he just went bonkers. I mean, this guy was ranting and raving and swearing and at this light in the sky, and I'm along for the ride going, well, this is going to be interesting. and it did, it did fly away, and there was no missing time or anything like that. Thank God. But, I have no doubt in my mind that that particular individual, had he been able to get a hold of one, it would not have been good for the alien. So, yeah, I'm sure that, you know, if we're going to, you know, if we're going to say we want to learn more about grizzly bears, you know, we fly over, it's an old analogy, but we fly over top of them with a mysterious flying machine called a helicopter, and then we shoot them with a tranquilizer dart, where they suddenly fall asleep. And then they wake up with a tagger in their ear, and they have no memory whatsoever of what just happened. So we certainly tranquilize the bear because, gosh, I don't think it'd be any fun putting a tag in their ear while they're still awake. So, yeah, I'm sure you're right that, you know, it's it helps whatever the meaning of their project is, whatever they're trying to accomplish. By paralyzing us or leaving us asleep to a certain extent, certainly helps them do whatever they planned on doing.
So what's your guy's view on this thing where people get abducted over and over throughout their lives and they come to kind of accept it in a way and they become more a willing contactee rather than abductee? Do you think that the ETs are thinking, okay, we're safe with this person now. We don't have to control them so much. Or do you think it's on the human side?
A lot of abductions start when you're a very young, small child. They will examine or study or do whatever they're going to do while you're at that age. And as you grow older, and you may not realize at any of these times that you've been abducted and gone through this process, and they may take you again at 5, maybe 7 years later, and then again 5 or 7 years later, and on up until you get to a point where they no longer feel that they need to abduct you anymore, or maybe they still are and you just don't know it.
Do you think there's a certain level of, you know, what you call the Stockholm syndrome with what's going on?
Again, you know, you look at the human psyche. I mean, you get a wide variety of people. You know, everybody thinks a little bit differently. Everybody has a different personality type. So, you know, some people react to the situation a little differently. Some people are scared to death. Some people are traumatized. Some people are curious. Some people are curious to the point that they can't wait till the next time it happens, which I never personally understood, but I worked with a lot more people that were upset over the situation than happy about it. You know, I think it's a judgment call on the alien presence there. They will make a judgment call as to how much they allow the abductee to remember. If they think remembering a little bit is going to grease the wheels and make things go along a little better, then they will. Some people are actually taken in to the fold, as it were, and become helpers. I know Jim and I talked to a guy out in, I believe it was Michigan, the bus driver. He referred to himself as the bus driver because he had a long history of being abducted, and they started teaching him to help take a smaller craft around and pick up people to be abducted. And, you know, he had some memories of landing a craft and having people walk out of the house, you know, come on in and fly away with them. And, you know, we referred to him as the bus driver. You know, obviously he was a person, and he was a nice enough guy. I mean, you know, he was just trying to make the best of a very, very weird situation. You know, He also felt, I think, that you know, he was giving a human face to you know, the abduction experience, and perhaps making it a little bit easier on the people that were the other people that were being taken.
There've been a lot of times in which somebody who has been abducted numerous times gets to the point where they believe that these aliens and the abductions are being done for the good, for their good, for our good, that they're here to help us or to save us from our own selves or from some doom that may happen. And so they look forward to it so they can either learn more or just be with these people that they've learned to trust.
And have you heard of long-time abductees who kind of work with people on craft to help calm them down and just to sit with them? And it's like, I almost see it like, you know, you have in prisons, you have prisoners who they might call a trustee who are given jobs to do.
Whatever they can do to make their work easier, they'll do to us. And it works.
You know, the fact that they can, you know, use telepathy and talk to someone directly, I think it has a greater effect on the manipulative capability, like Jim was talking about, you know, using regression or using hypnosis. You know, I think typically when someone is put under hypnotic regression, the first thing you have to do is be able to get them to relax and focus completely on what you're saying. And if they're using telepathy to literally talk to you directly into your brain, I think it makes it easier for them to calm you down in a way, especially if they can control some of your brain's functions. You know, if you see a little gray walking towards you, and if they can control your brain, not to fire off your adrenal glands so you can scream and run away, it would probably behoove them to do so. And I think that's probably, you know, when we get people that are, you know, either not waking up or waking up and can't move, or they're acting out of character that they normally would, I think that some of their brain functions are being controlled, either through the, I don't know if it's through the telepathy or some other means. I mean, you know, I think we're going to find out in the future here as we continue experimenting and looking into the human brain, that we're going to find out that, you know, people with telepathy and premonitions and stuff like that, it's all kind of related, I think. It's just, you know, certain centers of the brain that are capable of, you know, sending and receiving and picking up stuff that we normally in our everyday lives either try to ignore or are unaware of. And I'm sure in your line of work over there that you've worked with a number of people that are gifted. And as I like to put it, by the way, this was in the book as well, you know, the people that I've worked with over the years that are having abductee experiences are all gifted people. They all have some type of a special sense, whether it's they have premonitions or they can see auras, or they empathic, or they sense things from other people. They're gifted sensory wise. All abductees have these traits. Now, that's not to say that if you have those traits, you're an abductee, because that's not the way it works. But the fact that you're gifted shows that your brain functions a little bit differently, or maybe just a little bit higher functionality in certain areas of the brain that allows them to either contact you or control you to a greater degree. That'll give somebody something to think about.
Yeah. And also implants, they're possibly part of this control. Maybe they, once they're inside you, ETs can use them to amplify whatever they're doing. But, you know, I'm just guessing. Does any of us know for sure what they're for?
Not really. I mean, I don't hear about the implant or level of implants as much now as it used to be. And of course, if someone has, if someone's having some type of an experience and for some reason something shows up on an X-ray, a lot of times now, especially if it's something that's misunderstood, that's not to say that it's an implant. I mean, you know, people experiencing life, poke and jab and are injured and have various things that remain unknown, shoved under their skin from when they went camping and stuff like that. Some implants have been little cylindrical devices with a little thin wire, spiral wire antenna hanging out the end that seem to evaporate into nowhere. Some things have been sneezed out. Some things have been removed. Dr. Lear, for years was trying to find stuff in there that anybody could make any sense out of. We think of an implant, that I was talking about the grizzly bear. You know, if we were to put an implant in a grizzly bear, how would we do it? And of course, our technology and their technology is about as far apart as you can get. So, we're expecting to see an implant that would be something that we can recognize as an implant. And a lot of the things that they pull out of people are just look like fragments of something. And quite often they're so small, it's really impossible to tell much about what this is made out of even, because, by the time you take a sampling of it, there's nothing of it left, or it just evaporates. You know, they have it in a container and then the next time they go and get it, it's not there. They may use some type of nanotechnology. If they could put something in you, and maybe that's the upgrade to the proverbial implant, is now they just use nanotechnology. And so you can't even pinpoint a foreign body because it's so small within the body. But, the implants have been a very frustrating thing. Everybody was hoping every time something was found that they would have an aha moment to say, yes, this is made from something not of this earth, or we can prove that this is transmitting and receiving, or we don't know what the whole thing was all about. I mean, I'm sure it was some factor in the control, but nothing that we can prove one way or another.
The implant also seems to have a multi-function in that they might use it as a GPS. They can track you down, find you whenever they want. The implant, like Bob was saying, so much we don't know about with that and anything about it. We haven't learned how to be able to communicate with it, or, I mean, if we can back engineer a UFO, can we back engineer an implant? But as Bob says, it's usually dissolved after. I mean, I met this one guy who had an implant removed from him. The person that, or it was a, I think a, like a, some medical function or office or something that pulled the implant out, cut half of it, kept half, gave him the other half. And as Bob described, it just looked like a bunch of wires and stuff on some little piece of object. And it's only going to be good or there as long as they want it to. And somehow maybe they have a self-destructive control over it.
Part of the control of these different methods of control is screen memories.
You know, I've talked to people when they were very young and they were at home in their bed. One of them said that there were these monkeys in the room, that they were in masks that were made them look like clowns. And somebody else said they saw them, they looked like little doctors. And it seems like, you know, basically it's a grey there, but they're imposing an image on you telepathically.
I had one woman tell me that she woke up in the middle of the night and saw her grandfather standing by the doorway looking in at her. And when she realized that her grandfather had died 10 years ago, she knew it couldn't be him. She didn't believe in ghosts. She realized the next day that it wasn't her grandfather, but it was an alien because she had been abducted and had very faint memory of the abduction, but not enough to realize or have any control over the whole situation.
Screen memories are funny things. And again, you know, it could be initiated by the abductors to create something that's a little less traumatic, or it could even be, you know, the human brain trying to say, oh, this can't be what I'm seeing. I must be seeing this. Over the years, I've run into quite a few instances that were, I know Bud Hopkins used to tell this story where this guy was driving along in his car and this cow was running alongside his car, looking in the window at him. The car, the cow had unusually large eyes, and it was running, and he was driving down the road at highway speed, and the cow was keeping up with him. And you know, I did the story. Yeah, I don't remember where it went from there, but you know, I've had other people say, "Oh yeah, I saw this deer. This deer came right up to me in the woods, and it had this huge black almond-shaped eyes." Another guy that came to me, and he said, and this was a story told around someone's table where, you know, this guy was not claiming to have abductions. He was just telling a story of this enormous owl he found along the road. And I'm listening to him, and he said it was the strangest thing. It was just standing there. It was looking at me, and I stopped the car and I got out to look at it, and it didn't fly away. I said, "Well, it was a large owl. How large was he?" Because it was over 3.5 feet tall. Oh, okay. Well, there are no owls 3.5 feet tall. They're with large black almond shaped eyes, but you know, more and more people are. It's funny. One of the things that tends to, well, not funny, funny, but one of the things that tends to spook people who are having abduction experiences, a lot of times, if they're suddenly confronted with a face of an owl, a picture of an owl, will sometimes freak them out.
Well, it's been great talking to you guys. We've just about run out of time. The book's called Alien Abduction, The Control Factor, and people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes, they can. Amazon or directly through Schiffer Books, Schiffer Publishing, which was our publisher.
Well, yeah, thanks again for coming on the podcast. It's been great.
Well, I'm glad you invited us and was willing to hear our story, read our book, and help us promote it.
Yeah, and thanks for sending the book. I've got it right here.
Yep.
And that was an interview with James Book and Robert Long about their book, Alien Abduction, The Control Factor. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can hear the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get access to an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Our Paranormal Afterlife, and there are over 300 episodes. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regressions, and I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. I think you've been at UFO conferences and there are people there that spot someone and they recognize them and say, hang on, when I was abducted, you were there as well.
That has happened. A lot of times, when you go to the conferences or the MUFON symposiums, you know, there's